Ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-bee-bo, ba-dee-boo-doo-dee-dee-da, shoo-bee-bee-gow, bee-do-bo-do-dee-da, la-da-da-doo-doo-doo, dee-dee-doo-doo-doo-doo, fo-do-do-do-do-do, ma-da-ra-da-sha-da, bee-diddle-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Already we're starting this one-off podcast very strongly, Elliot Kalin, with our theme song, the theme from I, Claudius, as performed by world-renowned vocalist Paul F. Tompkins.
Yes, John Hodgman, Mr. Tompkins is the preeminent interpreter of TV miniseries theme songs from the 1970s, which is why we are so lucky to have him for this I, Claudius, our podcast about the 1976 series I, Claudius.
Yeah, but now I just want to hear Paul F. Tompkins sing the theme from MASH, Suicide is Painless. That would be good, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it would be great, great. And the theme from Rich Man, Poor Man, is there one? I don't know, I've never seen it, but I assume there is. Let's hear him sing it.
Yeah, get on it, Paul. But meanwhile, we have this to do. Let's first and foremost thank our listeners who have endured us talking about I, Claudius for months now on social media and on other podcasts. And now this is it. We're thrilled to finally be able to share this, the actual podcast, with everyone. That includes you, listener.
For anyone listening who didn't discover this show from Twitter or us talking about it on Instagram or in our own podcasts, The Flophouse and Judge.
I know, it's very hard to say. Judge John Hodgman is a terrible name for a podcast, but that's my podcast. Also, I've been telling people about I, Claudius on the subway. I just walk up and down the subway telling people, spreading the word that way.
Mm-hmm. And because I'm in Los Angeles, I've been writing I, Claudius on pieces of paper and crumpling it up and just throwing it out the window of my car as I drive down the freeway.
So when you're writing up a quick explanation for what I, Claudius is all about and then crumpling it up and throwing it out of your car,
mm-hmm.
What do you write down? How did we get here to your earbuds?
I'll talk about my I, Claudius marketing strategy another time. I think the thing we need to explain is, first off, listener, you are currently listening to me, Elliot Kalin, and Judge John Hodgman from the year 2020. But
the current year, 2020.
The me in the rest of the series is mostly Elliot Kalin from the year 2019, the distant past.
Yes, and this, the sound of my voice, is 2020 John Hodgman. You can tell because it's got a brand new vibe. Compared to the 2019 Hodgman you're going to be listening to through most of this podcast, because we recorded this entire series over the course of, I think it was like 3 or 4 months on and off because of our very busy schedules.
Mm-hmm. In demand.
Yeah. And the plan was that we would release one episode a week after we launched on February 17th, 2020. But guess what happened?
We just wanted to keep doing more stuff, mainly. As we were recording the episodes, our producer, Jordan Cowling, you'll hear her in the show. She's the best.
Jordan Cowling.
She was simultaneously tracking down interviews with cast members and other people you might be familiar with who are going to really elevate the show by giving John and myself insights either about the series, I, Claudius, or the ancient Roman world in which it takes place. So,
And also elevating the show just by having less of you and me in it, Elliot.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The test audiences said less of the host's voices and more of any other voice or sound.
Other interviews that Jordan can get, please. So most of our special guest interviews on the show were recorded after Elliot and I had recorded our own episode recap. It's a mishmash. It's a Frankenstein's monster of a podcast, but it has come to life. And the point that we're trying to say is that this living creature of the dead, I, Claudius, is entirely pre-recorded, okay? And by the time you hear this, every episode will have been completed. So when you hear, like, Elliot and me reference what we might want to do on future episodes,
Those future episodes have already recorded. That future has taken place already.
Right? Very clear, right? When you hear 2019 Elliot and John Hodgman think about the future, that future is now past.
Yes.
This is a historical podcast, so this makes sense.
Yeah, it is history already.
Right. So just keep in mind as you listen that for this special Maximum Fun series, you'll be listening to an Elliot and John that no longer exist. We are a voice from the past. We have written down our thoughts into scrolls that went into leather bins that have been hidden under a privy in ancient Rome to be discovered much, much later on by you. And believe me, if I knew in late 2019 what I know now in early 2020, well, let's just say I'm a much more evolved human being than I was way back in November.
So, 2020 John, who's I'm speaking to right now. If you could go back in time to tell 2019 John something, the John from last year that recorded this show, something he'd definitely want to know, what would you tell him?
Great question, Elliot. I would tell 2019 John Hodgman, don't worry about getting Sir Patrick Stewart to talk with you about the show. He will, and you do. You will talk to Sir Patrick Stewart. You maybe should worry a little bit more about the audio quality of that interview. 2019 John, maybe you should have arranged to not have cocktails with Patrick Stewart in a noisy restaurant and then talk about I, Claudius. But you will get it done, 2019 John. What else would I tell 2019 John? 2019 John, you have no idea when you are undertaking this podcast what an incredible delight it is to not merely spend time with your friend Elliot Kalin, but also to get to know Jordan Cowling, our producer, and her mom, Avis. Avis had been a huge fan of I, Claudius when it came out originally in the 1970s. And so much of my experience, and I think as we've learned in the process of making this podcast, many people's experience is seeing their parents when they were young watching this show and wondering, what is this show? Why is it so strange? Why is there so much nudity on a PBS show? And what does it mean that my mommy and or daddy like this so much? So we immediately knew we needed to get Jordan in conversation with her mom as she experienced, Jordan experienced I, Claudius for the first time, and to get some feedback from her mom, Avis, as to what she took away from it. Because if there's one thing Jordan's mom, Avis, isn't, it's an ancient Roman white dude. So to the degree that this was relatable to her, we wanted to find out.
She's going to be the fan favorite, for sure.
For sure. Elliot of the future, 2020 Elliot, what would you like to tell 2019 Elliot?
I think I would tell him, don't mix baking soda and vinegar in your mouth to make a mouth volcano, because that will be a mistake.
I don't remember that happening on the podcast. Did you do that?
It was something that happened at a child's birthday party, and it was neither fun nor entertaining for anybody, nor safe.
Oh, I see. You're using our power of time talk to instruct you to do something else besides, you're taking it off topic of the podcast.
Yes,
I have general advice now. 2019 Elliot.
If I'm going to go back in time to give some advice, I have such bigger issues than anything that happened in the podcast. Yeah.
Well, now that I know everything's on the table, I'm going to tell 2020 John Hodgman from a few moments ago, don't bother to ask Elliot that question.
That's fair.
All right. You hear this wonderful banter between me and Elliot? Well, it speaks to, we're friends. Frankly, we're family. We used to be on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole podcast is about family drama. And listeners, we're going to let our past selves take over and introduce you to those cuckoo Claudians, the original imperial dynasty that ruled Rome, starting in what? Before Common Era, would you say?
Starting, it was about, I wish I had notes in front of me. About roughly, what, like a 10 BC?
We only spent 4 months of our life doing this.
You'll follow those rambunctious Romans as they go through several generations from shortly before the beginning of the Common Era to roughly, 40 of the Common Era.
I know what these listeners are thinking. It's like, forget about Common Era. Forget about the birth of the historical Jesus Christ. When does this take place in the context of the Battle of Actium, which is of course the final battle in the civil war between Octavian and Mark Antony? And Mark Antony had allied with Cleopatra to try to take over Rome. Octavian defeated him, and Octavian named himself emperor as a result after the Battle of Actium, thus becoming Augustus, the first emperor of Rome, played by Brian Blessed in the TV show. Then he married Livia. Livia got divorced from her husband, married the emperor, and she's got a grandson named Claudius who opens this show. Hey, we don't have to tell you all about it. If you want to watch the show as you consume this podcast, that is advisable. Probably it's better than this podcast. And you might want to go over to iTunes or Amazon Prime Video, or anyone with the Amazon channel Acorn, it's included in that subscription, at least for U.S. residents. I'm going to tell you that there's some other, let's just say, black market ways to get at this thing. Or go to your local library. You know what libraries got?
Oh, yeah.
DVDs of I, Claudius, for sure. It's basically mandatory. Every library has one.
You could also go to your local library to get a copy of the book, I, Claudius, but then you'll be confused when we talk about performances, because you'll be like, there's no actors in this book. It's just a book.
Yeah, I think we've confused them enough. Let's get on with it. You can go and watch the first episode of I, Claudius. Pause this. Go watch the first episode of I, Claudius. Then come back. Then watch the second episode. Then come back. Or watch them all. Or watch them none. Or just listen to me and Elliot yell at each other for probably about 14 delightful hours. So let's get on with the podcast. If memory serves, Elliot, the show picks up with your 2019 self explaining that the story of I, Claudius was one of
intrigue and murder
and revenge and bad blood.
The baddest of blood.
Within a family. I, Claudius, is a very intelligent, incredibly intelligent person who is the narrator of this story of this family that is extremely dysfunctional. The Roman royal family, which is extremely dysfunctional. And he ends up, well, spoiler, becoming emperor himself through unexpected ways. What better way to discuss I, Claudius than to have as co-hosts the two most bitter rivals within the Maximum Fun family?
Mm-hmm.
I, John, et tu, Elliotus.
It's a different Roman story.
Et tu, Elliotus.
I, Elliotus.
You know what we should have done when we were starting?
Count it off.
Except this. I.
Claudius.
No. Remember, we're counting. I.
Oh, I.
I.
IV.
V.
VI.
And we're off.
You're right. We should have used Roman numerals, the worst numbering system.
Quicker than boiled asparagus.
Or as quick as boiled asparagus, I'll have you out. Out!
We're off to this very, the inaugural episode.
Well, I think we should first discuss, why are we doing this? What was the reasoning behind our doing an I, Claudius viewing podcast, other than the fact that I, Claudius, a 1976 BBC production, is on everybody's lips these days? It's just very zeitgeisty for us to do an episode-by-episode watch of a show that is almost 50 years old.
First of all, yes. So it may not be on everyone's minds and lips, except for my minds and lips. Every day I think about it. Every day I love this. I love this TV show. This 1976 British miniseries, which was the Game of Thrones of its time.
Yes,
Elliot Kalin. I mean,
oh, I believe it.
You're a bit younger than I am. You had never seen it before.
No, I had. So, for anyone who's not super familiar with it, I, Claudius is based on a novel by Robert Graves that dates from the 30s. And they tried to make a movie of it. Joseph von Sternberg tried to make a movie with Charles Laughton in 1937.
Here we go.
The movie was not finished. And so in 1976, they did this TV series of it. So I'm familiar with the novel, which is a fictionalization of actual Roman history. But I'd heard of the show's reputation, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah, but this is what you have to understand, Elliot. All right, yeah. There was a novel, two novels, I, Claudius and Claudius the God.
Claudius the God, not as good as I, Claudius, for the novels.
Sure, okay. Why don't we dance on Robert Graves' grave?
Sure. I mean, goodbye to all that, his World War I memoir, wonderful book. So okay. I like his other books. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
You're a literal grave dancer. The last wordplay I'll have on this podcast. And there was a never completed Charles Laughton motion picture, of which some footage survives. I'm not surprised you brought that up in the first 7 minutes.
Because you're a
historian of old cinema.
Because I'm a real film snob, and Joseph von Sternberg, who was the director of it, I'm just happen to be a big fan of his movies. And he did a film about Catherine the Great called The Scarlet Empress, which is insane. And so it only makes me wonder what his I, Claudius might have been like. But this TV show was the first, right, full flowering in a public electronic mass entertainment medium of this story.
So it was adapted by British television writer Jack Pullman, who, and in the tradition of British television, he wrote every episode of it. There was no writer's room. He adapted the novel, these massive two novels, into a 10 or arguably 11 episode, I can never remember, but I guess I'll find out.
mini, there's no way of knowing. The records are lost to history.
Adapting the novel of the palace intrigue surrounding the Emperor Augustus and then Emperor Tiberius and then Emperor Caligula and then ultimately Emperor Claudius, and the family drama at the very top of the Roman power structure in the when was this? Oh, it was the early part of what we call the Common Era now, right after the AD turned into the BCE.
Well, it covers that time. Because Claudius, the story kind of starts in the BC era, and from before his birth, and then
I presume you capitalized the H in his,
yes,
because we are talking about the birth of Jesus Christ, who is an off camera character in this drama.
Yes, but it starts with Jesus's birth and death happens entirely off camera, concurrently with some of the events of the story.
All right, enough with the history. Let me give you a little history lesson. 1976.
This is what I wanted. I wanted the personal history part. Yeah.
All of there were the books. There was the Charles Lawton Joseph von Sternberg adaptation. There was also the real life of Emperor Claudius. Also, the real life of at least the historical Jesus Christ.
You could say that Claudius's real life was the first true adaptation of I, Claudius.
That's right. But none of it is as important as Brookline, Massachusetts, 1976.
Or as I would call it, the year one BSW before Star Wars.
Right. Masterpiece Theater, a PBS program, now known for Downton Abbey and Poldark, mm-hmm. maybe? I don't know. Stuff.
And also Mr. Selfridge, everyone's favorite Jeremy Piven delivery vehicle.
Exactly. Masterpiece Theater debuts this British miniseries about ancient Rome that captures the attention of, if not the nation, then every PBS watcher in the world. And it truly is, it became a phenomenon for two reasons. One, it's very, very good. And as you are one of the three co-hosts of the Flophouse, it's been a while since you've probably seen a good thing.
Oh, very much so.
The acting is superb. And the story is salacious and twisting and frank and often nude. There's a sexual candor to this production, and it is also candid about the use and abuse of power, and there are a lot of different people who are jockeying for this particular throne, which is the Emperor's Bench of Rome, and everyone was talking before there was the internet. There were just wine and cheese parties in Brookline, Massachusetts, where everyone was talking about it, and a generation of us who are a little older than you, Elliot, but quite a bit younger than my parents, grew up wandering out of bed into the living room while this thing was being shown and seeing John Hurt as Caligula performing horrible acts and being traumatized.
So we're going to be working through a lot of your memories from childhood podcast.
Those are they. But what I would like to... Yeah. But I mean, when I have spoken about I, Claudius to people in the past, if they're of my generation, they often will say, oh, yeah, that scared me.
Well, in a strange way... So, I'm slightly younger than you, but it feels like the experience was a little bit what, like, Twin Peaks was for my generation, where I was a kid when Twin Peaks was on, and it was very much something my parents and their friends were all talking about, right. And I would see glimpses of it, and I'd be like, what is this? Is this what, like, is this the television I'm going to watch when I'm a grown-up? Because if so, I'm on board. Count me in. Thank you. Yes, sir. But it was this very strange thing that I could only see in glimpses and not fully understand the whole of, and I wonder if that's what it was like for you with I, Claudius. Because, like, you weren't watching it episode to episode, right? Or were you?
When I was but a youth?
When you were a kid,
When I was 5 years old when this came out? No. I was...
I don't know. I know your family was in Massachusetts, traditionally very liberal, so maybe they were like, it's time for you to learn about power and decadence and human sexuality in ancient Rome. You're five. This is the time to learn.
They waited until I was nine, just like all good families. Although I have watched this with my son twice. At the first time when he was about 10, and let me tell you something, Elliot Kalin, he loved it.
Really? Because it's a little slow when it first starts, and we'll get to that as we talk about the first episode.
No, it's a little slow all the time. I mean, it truly takes its time.
One of the things that I found, because again, I've never watched this series before, so right now I want to watch it as we're doing the podcast, so I've only seen the first episode. And one of the things I found alternately delightful and frustrating was that it takes its time. So there would be times when it was like, all right, like, I know someone's going to poison somebody else, so can we get to that? And other times where I was like, I really like that they are engaging in kind of British small talk in ancient Rome right now.
Yes.
That these conversations between characters are structured as conversations that have digressions or trail off or have kind of awkward, quiet moments and aren't just like Game of Thrones where every line is a proverb, you know, or
right.
a threat.
Right, right.
Oh, no.
What's the matter? Is it too boring for you?
We had one last year.
That was last year. And anyway, the speaker was very dull.
There is a lot of subtlety to the dialogue. And you're right, there's a lot of anglicization of ancient Rome, to be sure. I mean, it's like they have depopulated. There are no Italians in ancient Rome. It's all just characters from a Jane Austen novel.
you had mentioned earlier, faster than boiled asparagus. Or is it steamed asparagus?
Quicker than boiled asparagus.
I love that in the middle of a very real argument where Emperor Augustus, and we'll get to it, is mad at his wife. He says, quicker than boiled asparagus. And she goes, oh, I hate that saying. It's a stupid saying.
Goes, whatever I like.
And I love that felt like a very British couple in a play thing to do, to suddenly be irritated about a phrase.
Yes. And it's terrific character building because not only is Augustus revealed to be both idealistic and childish and quick to enrage and then quick to be pacified like a child, like, say, a man-child, almost autocratic leader of a once great civilization.
I can't think of any parallels to that.
But also establishes his catchphrase right away, quicker than boiled asparagus.
That's what the Augustus talking, that's what the Brian Blessed talking doll said when you pulled the string. Because I assume they really merchandised the hell out of I, Claudius when it came out.
Oh,
you had all the talking dolls.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Jack Pullman, the creator, you know, wasn't paid a lot up front, but he very cannily reserved the merchandising rights.
And that's why he made a fortune off of Disneyland Empire's Edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The new I, Claudius theme park.
That's right.
Another example of how British it is the scene where there's a scene where Claudius, so it's structured mostly in flashback, and you catch glimpses in this first episode of Claudius as emperor, and his food taster is tasting his food for him to make sure it's not poisoned, and the food taster is making so many snide comments about how much garlic has been used in the dish.
The garlic's a little overdone for my taste.
You're always complaining about the garlic.
And it's like, well, if this was Rome, there is no amount of garlic that would be too much. But to an English person, I could see how there could be too much garlic in it. And it's just such a funny, this character of the persnickety food taster is just like a very funny character.
Yes, and
very English.
We'll get around to that
scene.
We'll
get to it, yeah.
In a moment, because what I would like to suggest, Elliot, is that...
Sorry, I'm jumping all over.
No, I know, and we need to...
You know,
we need to, I know, this is why the Republic had to be abolished.
Right? And an
because
empire
it was,
brought
it was
in,
chaos,
yeah.
And an emperor had to take control. You mentioned earlier, Elliot, that this held a certain cultural moment, or the cultural moment that I was describing that this TV show held in my life was similar to sort of what Twin Peaks held in your life. And Twin Peaks had a very unusual tone to it that would freak out a child who wandered into the room. I, Claudius has a almost a now completely stereotypical British drama tone to it,
mm-hmm.
Which is the sort of thing that would lure a precocious John Hodgman into a room. It's like, is that John Hurt I hear speaking? Oh,
yeah.
You know, and it features an all-star cast of amazing British actors and character actors, including, well, you'll find out who it includes. Oh, that'll be a teaser.
But a number of familiar faces that the audience, I'm sure, will be aware of.
The unnerving thing about it was not merely the nudity and the frankness, but also the production quality. It is shot on video, and it truly looks like it was shot in someone's basement rec room.
I started watching it with my wife, and the first thing she says was, "This looks like a play shot in someone's living room."
Yeah, it is. It's true for its time. I think even for its time, its production values were quite skimpy.
I was comparing it in my head to American television shows from the six. I was in my head. I'm like, okay, let me compare this to like a Twilight Zone episode. Twilight Zone is 15, 16 years before I, Claudius, and those episodes look so much better. And those are half-hour network shows. They are not a prestige miniseries. And I think it's just there's a charming British, we don't care about production values quality to a lot of older British entertainment. Where they're like, yeah. It's the words and the performance that matter. What? Who cares if Derek Jacobi's old age makeup looks like we just caked his face with Elmer's glue? Yes. Who cares?
It's very. I was glad. I have a note right here. Ask Elliot what he thinks about Derek Jacobi's old age makeup, because it is truly. It truly looks like he's put his face into a big vat of silly putty.
And is wearing a wig that I swear you can see his real hair sticking out from under the wig. Like, yeah. It's knowing it's one
and
of these
the
things
most
where,
alarming false eyebrows I've ever encountered. Yeah,
it is. It's like the transformation into an emperor has also transformed him into a Muppet of some sort. Like, you expect Claudius to be sitting there with Statler and Waldorf and just hurling heckles at Fozzie Bear based on the makeup.
Well,
but it's off-putting. Let's just say it's off-putting.
And but this is a perfect segue into the opening scene. Now we'll plod briskly and happily through the plot and stopping when we need to talk about stuff.
The shockingly poor makeup is in contrast with the title sequence, which looks beautiful, where tile floor with an image of Claudius and it says, "I Claudius," and a snake crawls
right over it. An incredible title sequence.
It's just great, and you're like, this is going to be stylish. It's going to look modern. It's going to look cool. And then you see this, like, that British video where there's, like, a halo of color around any flame from a candle.
Sure.
And this Muppet man shuffles in and starts the driest voiceover I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, okay, well, the title sequence promised a lot. Let's see if it can deliver.
But here's the thing. It is, and this is my defense, the production values are very poor. It is the words and the performances that matter, because they are luminous and they don't have a weird halo around them. They are just great. But before we proceed to this moment that starts the episode one, A Touch of Murder, I will echo something that you said, which was, I don't think that the British understood this to be prestige television, right?
Uh-huh.
We as Americans at the time and even now take anything with a British accent to be, oh, this must be very fancy. Especially since it's about history. But I think in England at the time, there, you know, making an El Cheapo adaptation of a 1930s novel about ancient Rome with the best actors they could just swoop off of the West End, to them, that's what television was. That's what you do. You know, it's like, yeah.
That's true.
We're just making to them, that's making the A-Team. You know, like, that's what, what else would we do?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and it's similar with the original, not to keep going back to the original novel, but Robert Graves later kind of semi-disavowed the novel, if I'm remembering correctly, where he was like, I just wrote it for the money. I wrote it for the money. And I basically just went into Roman history and took all the worst things anyone had ever said about any Roman emperor from that period and just put it in. And you read it, and it's a great book. But the idea that, to him, this kind of like historical epic about multiple Roman emperors was like his cash grab. Like, that's what he did to make a quick buck. I guess different expectations from because British entertainment, it's either, well, here's some Shakespeare again. Like, just let's throw some amazing actors into some Shakespeare and throw it on TV. Or it is the worst Dad's Army, like TNA slapstick goofball nonsense, and there's nothing in between.
Or Love Island, to be contemporary.
Yes. Yeah, British entertainment has two modes, and it's either super classy or super vulgar, and both of them are kind of treated the same by the public.
I've never seen a Love Island, but my daughter is obsessed with it, and she's always going around going, is what it is.
It is what it is.
Is what it is, which is apparently what everyone says on that show. Is what it is.
Just as when you were a kid, you walked around saying, we'll talk about this more later.
Right. Whoa. Oh, well, we'll talk about that more later. And about 35 minutes ago, you made the perfect segue into the opening scene. As we find Derek Jacobi, who plays Claudius, now in this present day moment, in old age, beginning to write the history of his family. And all of the secret stuff, because he received a prophecy from the Sibyl saying, basically, when he was several years younger, he went to go see an oracle. And the Sibyl, this oracle, said to him, you're going to get a gift that you didn't want, but everyone else wanted. There's a whole rhyme that goes with it.
What groans beneath the Punic curse and strangles in the strings of purse before she mends must sicken worse. 10 years, 50 days and 3, Claudius shall given be a gift that all desire but he. But when he's dumb and no more here, 1900 year or near, Claudius shall speak clear.
Yeah, it's an oracle. It's all poetic.
1900 year or near, Robert Graves will write a novel. Called I, Claudius. No, Claudius shall speak clear. It is a weird self-reference to the novel being written.
Yes.
In the 1930s. It's a little buzz market for his own novel.
It's very funny because it's almost, I wish they'd gone a little further and the rhyme had been like, Monday nights at 8 shall be the time when your story shall be told by thee. Like, they just went ahead, followed by EastEnders. Like, they just went even further with it, but it is a...
Your whole life shall be a book introduced by Alastair Cook, legendary host of Masterpiece Theater.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I knew you would get it, but I need to give some because we have a lot of cool young listeners
who are not familiar. I mean, if they're cool, they know about Alastair Cook and his Letters from America and everything. But what I also like about this is the implication is like, oh yeah, these oracles could tell the truth. Roman religion, I guess it was the right one. Anyway, moving on to the rest of the story.
So I, Claudius, now elderly and an unlikely emperor. In the very first scene, he's sitting down to write the story of his family, and then we flash back. There's a lot of moving around in time. And we flash back to before his birth.
Well, so when we just to give a timeline, when we talk about kind of present day him writing the story, it's around like 53 AD. And then we flash back to before his birth to 24 BC. So this is like 70 years before the scene we have just seen, before he is born. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And he is not yet born. And we enter the first of, I guess I would say, four total sets that they built for this show. Most of it takes place in two rooms.
Yes.
This is the grand chamber of
the
Palace of Rome.
This is the epic glory of ancient Rome. That's right. Is a couple rooms.
All the scope and pageantry that can be captured in a basement. This is one of the two main sets, which is this big, the grand public chamber of the palace of the Emperor of Rome, if you would call it that. I don't know what you would call it. The big house, the nice house.
The throne room of the palace, but it's not
this
quite
a palace.
This is
where he welcomes his guests and also where they lie around on couches eating food and drinking wine.
And ignoring the multi-ethnic performers from the far reaches of the empire that have come to entertain them.
Yeah. The Roman family is lying around on couches, getting drunk and falling asleep and eating their food. And the Roman family consists in this scene most notably, and I'll leave actually the most notable for last, but the Emperor Augustus, played by Brian Blessed,
mm-hmm.
his right-hand man and former... comrade at arms in the Battle of Actium, Marcus Agrippa, played by an actor whose name I can't remember. Even though I have the internet in front of me, I apologize. He gives a great performance. Will you look it up, please?
Yes, I'll look that up for you right now. So Marcus Agrippa was played by John Paul.
By John Paul. Well, he didn't have a very memorable name.
No.
You know what I mean?
He was one of these guys who he did roles on lots of different TV series,
sure.
And appeared in a number of different movies, but he was never, people weren't like, oh, I can't wait to go see the new John Paul film.
Yeah, no, he was in many of these actors are sort of lifelong career British television actors that are amazing at their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a woman being wooed by her husband. The husband is Tiberius, the stepson of Augustus. And he's played by George Baker, and he's canoodling with his wife, Vipsania, whose name I can't remember. You can look that one up.
Sheila Ruskin.
Sheila Ruskin. Like.
Yeah.
I'll do better at this next time. I'll have the whole thing up. Hang on, let me get it up right now.
It says fans of Doctor Who remember her for performance as Cassia in the serial The Keeper of Traken, and by Blake 7 fans as Alta 1 in the 1979 episode Redemption. So,
oh, she was in Blake 7?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. I do have some interesting cast trivia for a little bit later in here.
Okay.
But let me get this up so I can know what I'm talking about here. And then
do you want me to describe some of the other people who are in the room?
Yeah, you take over and I'll look up their names and real quick for you. Unless you've got them already.
No, I don't. Not all of them. Also, so we've mentioned that the Emperor Augustus is there. He's there with Marcus Agrippa, his old comrade at arms, who defeated Antony.
Together, they defeated Antony at the Battle of Actium, and that started Augustus's rule.
Yes, and essentially ended the Roman Republic and began the Roman Empire under right. Augustus. Then you've got Augustus's stepson.
Tiberius is stepson.
Stepson Tiberius. And then you got his daughter, Julia.
Julia, who is played by...
Played by...
Francis White.
Who is apparently, this according to Wikipedia, dubbed many Disney princess voices in the British-English dubs of Disney movies. So she's like the British Ariel, I guess, and the British Belle.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I did not know there was a British-English dub.
She's the British...
According to Wikipedia.
Aurora, Ariel, Belle, Jasmine, Pocahontas, Mulan, and Elsa.
Which is crazy because if she did Elsa, that's like she's in her. I mean, she's in her 60s now, so
she's 80
she must
years.
Have a great
she's
voice.
80 years old.
Oh, 80 years old.
She's 80 years old.
I don't know how to do math. Look, I'm thinking in Roman numerals now. I don't understand it anymore.
But here's the important thing: she is alive.
She does Granny Pig on Peppa Pig. Oh, okay, yeah. That's where my family would know her from.
And she does an amazing job in this.
She's great.
Her arc is incredible.
And in this pilot, she has a couple of fantastic scenes.
Okay, you want to talk about them or
no, not yet. We should say, and who else in the room? So Julia's married to
one more
to Marcellus.
Marcellus, who is the son of Augustus's sister. So he is Augustus's nephew, and he's in his late teens, it would seem, or early 20s.
He's very young, and he is an up-and-comer who, he's clearly Augustus's favorite right now. And there's one other person that we haven't specifically called out by name, right?
Well, two.
Who's the other person I'm thinking
Marcellus's about? Mother is there, too, Augustus's sister.
Oh, yeah, well, I was thinking about her.
I can't even remember the name of that character.
No, I don't remember. But more importantly, there's also Livia.
Livia, the most important character in I, Claudius, aside from I, Claudius. Mm-hmm. It should be called I, Claudius et Livia.
It should be called Livia's Tale as told to Claudius.
Yeah, Livia.
My Story by Livia with additional writing by Claudius.
Livia is played, and I do not need to check Wikipedia for this, Livia is played as any David Lynch's Dune fan will know by great actress Sian Phillips, S-I-A-N Phillips. I guess I'm pronouncing it.
Let's say Sean, and I'm sure we'll be corrected by a listener or by the actress herself at some point. That would be an honor.
She is an incredible actress. She was in David Lynch's Dune, but this is, and I'm sure she's done other great things, but this is a role of many lifetimes, I would say.
Yes.
And she is incredible.
She is, and people may know her as Cassiopeia from Clash of the Titans as well. And she's in Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. So that's to hit all the science fiction fans that are probably listening. She has non-science fiction roles, of course. She's in Beckett. You know, she's in some amazing stuff. She's in The Age of Innocence. But you probably know her from Dune, Clash of the Titans, or Ewoks, The Battle for Endor.
Okay, here's the deal. Livia is the wife of Augustus and the power behind the throne. An incredible, pragmatic, ruthless manipulator whose motives sway back and forth or live uneasily between what is best for Rome and what is best for her family's power. And she is not has been married before to a man who is now dead, who is the father of Tiberius and her other son Drusus, who enters later.
Mm-hmm.
But her previous husband had been a Republican, which is to say he wanted to see a restoration of the Republic. And she essentially saw the writing on the wall that Augustus and the Empire were going to last forever. So she divorced her husband to marry Augustus.
And this is something that is, I wonder how it was taken at the time. Not that, I mean, 1976 was like the beginning of the heyday of divorce in America, at least. But like in Rome, divorce was easy. It was pretty regular for the rich, at least. Like, people got divorced all the time. And it's just one of many ways that Rome, even though it seems like the way we present it in movies and things like that, is like, oh, it's kind of like England. Like, it's kind of like England, but, like, they wear togas instead of, you know,
right,
ascots and waistcoats.
Moral rectitude, stuffy tradition, but yes, in fact, quite libertine. And I think that's part of why I, Claudius, was so eye-opening as a popular history.
Yeah, that it was that they're really embracing the fact that, like, marriage was often a tool and it was broken very easily, that blood sports were a fact of everyday life in Rome, that, like, I had a professor at college who made the point in a classic drama class that what the Greeks did with drama, where they used it as a way to, like, purge themselves of their strongest emotions so they could be stronger as people, the Romans did by watching people murder each other. Like, blood sports took the form of theater for them. It's just like,
sure,
this crazy, crazy time. And so a lot of these characters are either divorced in the past or divorce and remarry again. And it's just like how fluid marriage is something that is – at first I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that like marriage was just like was a thing people did, but it was very rarely a lifelong thing among these rich people who are all playing, yeah, Games of Thrones, is at least.
Yeah, I mean, as marriage, you know, was for most of human history, it was a financial and or social arrangement.
Yeah.
Although these upper class Romans, they are creatures of passion. Tiberius really loves Vipsania. But he is later, within this very episode, which spans the course of about 20 years or so.
At least 10. Right. At one point, Claudius is like, well, but then they had to wait 9 years for the next thing. And right, it just jumps ahead 9 years.
Tiberius is forced by his mother to divorce the love of his life, Vipsania, in order to marry Julia, in order to draw closer to Augustus so that he would become the heir apparent instead of Marcellus.
Aren't you forgetting something? She's still married to Marcellus, and Marcellus is not dead yet.
When I start to forget things, you may light my funeral pyre and put me on it, dead or alive.
Well, don't ask me to divorce Vipsania, because I won't do it.
Oh, what a lover we have here. Did you bring back a pocket full of poems from the Rhine?
You may scoff all you like. Vipsania is the only thing in the world that means anything to me.
I always thought a boy's mother meant something.
Well, you do mean something. But so does she. So don't ask me to push her aside.
I may ask more than that before I finish.
And I'm skipping a whole subplot here, but basically the thrust of Livia's aims over this episode and succeeding episodes is she wants the very unlikable, the very tortured, the very self-hating and ultimately cruel and villainous Tiberius to follow Augustus to the throne. And Augustus hates Tiberius and is constantly trying to find someone else, someone more likable, to be the heir apparent.
And
but
so
to the point
wants...
that you just made, when Drusus, the brother of Tiberius, shows up and they have that incredible wrestling match.
Yeah, in their dojo.
Which was a set that I don't think I've ever seen after this one. It was like they used that set once.
Because
the gymnasium set.
As with all, this is just British filmmaking law that at the time, any scene where something was shot that had any sort of homosexual or homoerotic air to it had to be destroyed immediately after filming. So that's why that the set from Women in Love, where the nude wrestling scene takes place, that was also, I assume, destroyed immediately afterwards. It's just the laws have since been liberalized, and I think we're better off for it. But that was what it was at the time, you know.
So in that scene where Tiberius and his brother, who's back from the German front, the ongoing war in the German forest with the German tribes there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having this reunion. It is very semi-nude. It is very touchy-feely.
I mean, there's literally a scene where they're... part of the reunion is that they are in the baths together, scraping each other's backs.
Which
you know.
Is something that I don't know what it is.
I think that was a like Roman hygiene and grooming thing where it was literally scraping the dead skin and whatever like dust and particles and stuff out of you, you know. I mean, the Romans were very much about cleanliness. Like bathing was such a central part of their life, and like mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons why what I heard was that in medieval times they were like the Romans were sinful and they bathed. We will not be bathing, thank you very much. So they were trying to get rid of all that dead skin that we take for granted,
well,
and just use our pet egg to get rid of. They didn't have pet eggs back then.
It was a wooden scraper, which I guess was their version of a loofah at the time.
Yeah,
and Drusus and during
they would say
this,
loofus. They would call it a loofus.
Called you a doofus.
Boom,
weenie weedy weechy. Just then. But in the, but to the point you made, it's in that that moment of brotherly intimacy where, you know, Tiberius is having an existential crisis. Like, they made me divorce Vipsania. And Drusus goes, oh, that's right. Sorry about that. I heard that. I'm sorry. Whatever happened there? So
I've been away in Germany.
So casual, even in this, and it becomes a huge part. People are being constantly forced to divorce and marry other people in order to gain power.
So we skipped a very big thing in order to talk about that the reason that Livia wants Livia wants Tiberius on the throne. Marcellus and Agrippa are kind of struggling to both be Augustus's choice. Augustus is favoring Marcellus because he thinks Agrippa is too old. Livia, in order to remove Marcellus, takes the opportunity. Everyone's out on vacation except for Livia and Marcellus. And Livia takes the opportunity to poison Marcellus and murder him.
Right.
And which is one way to remove him from there. She wants Julia, Augustus's daughter, to marry Tiberius. But Augustus, to shore up his political support, promises her to Agrippa. And then 9 years later, Agrippa dies. And Livia's like, can Tiberius just marry Julia already? And forces him to divorce his wife and marry Julia, thus becoming, everyone assumes, the heir apparent to the throne, if there will be an heir. One of the things that runs through it is that, like, Augustus is not so sold on a hereditary monarchy himself. He does not want to be deified. And Livia is like, let's make you into a god and that'll just make things easier. But he doesn't want to do it.
Yes. Livia is very intent upon maintaining imperial rule. Augustus is a little bit wishy-washy on it. His public point of view is, I would retire if I could. If Rome could handle it, I would return the Republic, but I don't think I can.
To make a parallel that I think everyone's going to be more familiar with, he's very like Simón Bolívar, who sure. would liberate these South American countries and then essentially become their emperor and then say, I'd love to make this a democracy. Okay, when I feel like it's ready, I'll step down and then you can do it. And there's this kind of feeling of Augustus neither having the strength to declare himself just emperor for life and my son will be emperor, and not having the strength to step down and allow the people to take their control again.
Right. He is as all of the characters are drawn in this, very complex and very human, often very sympathetic, but often terrible.
You're just like your father. Always wanting the Republic. He was my enemy too at one time.
I'll never be that.
No. No, I didn't mean that. Be like him. You couldn't do better. I did him wrong once, you know. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I took your mother from him. And that has weighed with me over the years.
If you watch this show for nothing else, watch it for Brian Blessed doing a dead hate stare at someone.
He's got so many good ones.
His performance in this is astonishing because he's such a genial person all the time. Oh, let's be friends again, shall? This is what a Roman family should be like. And then the moment his stepson Drusus, who's Augustus's face falls into this death stare, and he goes and just stares at him for a long time. It's this incredible thing where he just like. You can almost hear all the blood draining from his head to become so icy. It's one of the greatest performances and the thing that brings me back to it all the time. And, of course, everyone's terrific. But we can't plod through this plot much further because it would take too long to go scene by scene. And people should be watching along with us. And also the plots are very, twisty. And a lot happens.
One of the strange things about this is that since it is based on historical fact as closely as Robert Graves could make it, it doesn't follow normal plot structure the way you'd think it was. The same way that's like they have to jump ahead 9 years to get to a thing. That's like not great screenwriting, but it's what happened. And one of the things that I take a lot of weird pleasure out of was watching the movie, the show, and while I was watching it, looking up the history of some of the characters, when something happened, looking it up on Wikipedia and being like, yeah, that's what happened to him. Yeah. Right. That's crazy.
Never mind how accurate to the book, how accurate to history it is, because I am not going to bother to look it up. So guess what, Elliot? As we go forward, that's your job.
Okay.
And listeners, it could be your job. If you know that there's something in the iClaudius TV show and you're watching along with us that you know is counterfactual, please let us know. You can always email me at hodgman@maximumfun.org, and I guess I'll handle the emails if you check out the history. How does that sound, Elliot?
Good that
division of
good.
Labor. This is yes. how great empires are born. So that's, I'm just going to say everything that I remember until I can't remember anything about this episode, in just in terms of what happens, just to give the audience a sense of how thick and dense these episodes are, even though it doesn't feel that way when you're watching it.
No, then, it feels very. It feels like there's plenty of time for them to talk about how thin Tiberius's wife is, or any of that stuff. While they're, you know, it doesn't feel rushed and twisty, but it will while we describe it, I'm sure.
All right, we already talked about snake on tile. Snake crawls across tile.
And this is the sped up version.
Old Claudius. Yeah, I'm gonna recap.
I think we can pick up a little bit later than that.
Old Claudius with Putty is sitting in a dim room of one of the three sets they have. He remembers that he was prophesied to become emperor. He is emperor. He goes back to his family. Family is lying around getting drunk. We introduce everybody. Claudius talks about all, and this is before he's born. Livia's wants Tiberius to become emperor. A cake is brought out to celebrate the Battle of Actium. Marcellus insults Agrippa. Agrippa leaves the room in a huff.
I'm glad you mentioned the cake, which is shaped like a ship and looks like a great British poorly made prop approximation of what was probably a very impressive cake in ancient Rome.
It was the worst British bake-off of all time. Worth seeing alone. A Greek poet tells the story of the Battle of Actium, but also has time to complain with the butler about how little at work there is for actors.
Everyone's an actor in Rome. There just isn't enough work to go round.
And what there is goes to friends and relatives. It's the same everywhere.
The theater isn't what it was.
No. And I'll tell you something else. It never was what it was.
I thought it was a beautiful moment at the end of the Greek actor's oration. Augustus comes up to him and thanks him for it. And he says, of course, the battle wasn't really like that. But I understand why you have to put it that way. And this beautiful emotional moment where Augustus is remembering how, I guess, how messy the battle actually probably was and how unglamorous it was. And the orator is feeling the disappointment of letting down the emperor, but the emperor is letting him down softly. But yeah. That it is also a moment of the show saying to the audience, we're going to look, this is a production. This is drama. And so there are things that are going to happen that aren't exactly the way they happened. And that's okay. You understand why we have to do that. And so I thought it was like that as a meta moment worked more for me than the Oracle saying, in 1976, they're going to put your show on television. Let me explain to you. An electron will go across the screen. And Claudius is like, hold on. Let me get all this down. I'll be rich.
Yeah. So Emperor Augustus says to the Greek poet, this isn't your daddy's story about the Battle of Actium. This is going to be rough and tumble up here in Rome.
So the show opens. Claudius is, they're saying, hail Emperor Claudius. And it goes, you're probably wondering how I got into this mess.
That's basically how it goes. That moment with it, of course, the emperor also says, as he ushers the Greek poet out the door, wonderful, wonderful, poetic license, I understand. We'll talk some more later, and just shoves him way down to the end of the hall, which is, to me, we'll talk some more later is the greatest ender of a conversation that I've ever heard in my life. And I hate to say, I use it from time to time when I'm having in a conversation that's like, I got to get out of this. So I said, well, this is wonderful. We'll talk more later.
I think I've been on the receiving end, I think, of a we'll talk more later from you, I think.
Okay, well, we will talk more later about Elliot, but
and
now,
it comes,
hang
no,
on.
And it's a great way to do it. It's always like, okay, I understand what's happening, but that was very polite. Thank you.
Yeah, and we, you know what? Because you're my friend, we will talk more later, Elliot. We haven't even gotten past this first scene, right? So then what happens is Agrippa is leaving Rome because he's in a sulk because Marcellus is going to get the throne, and he feels overlooked and insulted by Marcellus. And Agrippa, who is like a 55-year-old man, is sulking around, passive aggressively saying, I'll stay if you want me to, but it doesn't seem like you want me to. And Livia says, actually, we don't want you to. And and so Agrippa goes off to the Isle of Lesbos, a real place. And then Marcellus gets sick, and his wife Julia and his mother, whose name we can't remember, are out of town. And so
Momcellus, we'll just call her Momcellus.
Momcellus, Livia poisons him.
Army doctors, what do they know? No. I'll send my own. He'll know how to take care of him.
He's sick, and Livia insists that she will nurse him himself, but she's a poisoner. And then Musa, the doctor, is like, I don't know what happened. He's getting worse. And she's like, it's fine. You're overreacting. And then the moose of the doctor goes, no, but he's vomiting. He's bringing up green slime. And all of a sudden she opens the door. She goes, green slime? I've never seen that before, because she's interested in how her poisoning is going. She hadn't seen that before.
It's like the implication is that, oh, her past poisonings have gone in a different direction.
Right. Meanwhile, Augustus is off visiting the provinces. When he hears where Marcellus is dead, he comes back. He stops in the Isles Lesbos to get Agrippa to come back. Agrippa plays some more weird, hard-to-get games. Finally agrees to come back to Rome to quell this Republican uprising. Makes Augustus promise to marry the widowed Julia, Augustus' daughter, to him, to bond their arrangement in blood and marriage, which makes Livia really mad because she wanted Julia to marry Tiberius. And then we fast forward to Claudius, who's old, and says, well, she had to wait 9 years. Then Agrippa died. Julia married Tiberius. Tiberius is mad because now he's stuck in Rome. He only ever felt alive in the provinces. His brother comes back from the German front to they throw a medicine ball at each other sweatily for a while.
And they have a little karate fight. Judo fight.
They have some fraternal fun, like grappling with each other in a sweaty way for a while. And this brings out a moment of what will unusual humanity for Tiberius.
Tell you something, Drusus. Sometimes I so hate myself, I can't bear the thought of me anymore. You don't know anything about darkness, do you? Inside darkness. Blackness.
Ah, stop bragging. I could match you black for black.
Basically, Tiberius is confessing to clinical depression.
Yes.
And Drusus is like, buck up. That's the Roman way. And
then, stiff upper lip, chum.
Yeah.
Just like us Romans, it's a long way to Tipperary. Classic Rome.
And then Drusus goes, well, I got to go back to the German forest. And Tiberius goes, I don't want to be here anymore. And gets madder and madder and madder. He goes and sees
Vipsania.
He's like,
they made me inspect the fire department. I don't want to do that.
He complains about it to his mom, Livia, and Augustus doesn't love me. And Livia says to her own son, well, not everyone is lovable, which is great. In a sulks, as they say, he goes to see Vipsania on the sly, tries to get her to commit suicide with him. This is Tiberius still, because he is still in love with her and he doesn't want to be married to Julia at all. And she refuses to commit suicide with him. And he goes, if I don't marry you, if you are out of my life, I don't know what kind of monstrous pedophilic villain I'm going to become. Foreshadowing. Augustus finds it out, yells at him, I don't like it, you can't be seeing her. Yells at him for a long while until Olivia lies and says that she knew that the Tiberius was going to see his ex-wife.
Yeah, it's okay to visit your ex-wife as long as it's not secretive, because if it's secretive, then it implies that you're still in a relationship. But if it was open, then it's like, oh, you're just visiting your friend you happened to be married to a while ago.
Right. Augustus then goes, oh, I was hasty. Now, if you wanted to cheat on my daughter from time to time, that's fine, a gentleman's agreement, but not with Vipsania. I don't like it, you understand? Wink, wink. Ah, this is what a Roman family should be. It's just horrible. Then a letter is delivered to Tiberius, which he unwisely reads aloud because it is from Drusus, who is on the front. He's been wounded, a slight head wound, and he starts going on about how the Republic should be restored and Augustus should step down from the emperorship.
Yeah. What a poor leader he is, and how corrupt and disgusting the Rome has become, right, since Augustus has. And not disgusting like garbage on the streets, but like morally.
No, right. There's probably some garbage on the streets. They probably
believe it.
Definitely that vomitorium was gross. Guess what? They didn't actually vomit in the vomitorium. It's a myth. Anyway.
I mean, that's the thing. You would have, because if they had, she would not have been so surprised by that green slime.
Exactly. Livia knows now that that Drusus is a bad actor and might actually convince Augustus to step down. So she says, I'm sorry he's feeling so bad. I'll send my own doctor to take care of him. Both the audience and Tiberius knows that Livia is sending the doctor to poison her own son in order to stop his republican rabble rousing. But Tiberius, who loves no one else in his life except for Vipsania and his brother, does nothing because he's a craven jerk. Drusus then, we go to the German front to the rather luxury glamping tent, which is the third set that we see in this whole series, where Drusus no longer has a headroom.
It's just a large tent. Just a large tent. There's no, he doesn't have like a, it would not be very Instagrammable, right. I would say.
Drusus no longer has a head wound, but he now has a messed up leg because his horse fell on him. And I think they just rubbed a bunch of raw hamburger on his leg to make it look real bad.
Yeah.
And his man hands him a letter from his epaulette pocket saying that...
I'm just glad you pointed out where the letter came from.
They kept the letters in weird pockets, weird epaulette pockets. And so saying that Musa is on his way to take care of you.
In a world where men don't have pants, they need to find places to put pockets.
That's true.
Unless they're either going to have a sporran, like a Scotsman, or they're going to have it in their epaulettes. That's the way you do it.
But even Drusus knows that when it's announced to him that Livia's doctor is coming to take care of him, that his days are numbered. He knows that they've found out that he's a Republican, and he's
they're like, don't worry, Livia's doctor's coming. And he's like, oh shoot. Right. And then it cuts to the next scene. Right.
Next scene is, Drusus is dying of gangrene. The doctor failed to cure him, and he says,
Rome has her severe mother, and Gaius, Lucius, a cruel stepmother.
Dies. Antonia, Drusus's wife, who happens to be up there in the German forest as well, is angry at him because she says, you didn't wait, because she was bringing the children to say goodbye to him before he died, including baby Claudius, who is crying. And in an act of truly purposeful traumatizing of a baby, puts the crying baby upon its dead father's breast. And you are absolutely convinced this is the only way this episode can end. But no, there's more.
Oh, no. A little
flashback
bit more.
Forward to Claudius in his writing chamber.
We have to see Claudius
chamber.
Having dinner.
Yeah. For the longest dinner scene, like solo dinner scene, / wine tasting, food tasting, bickering scene.
Look, Andre and Wallace and Shawn didn't have as long a dinner as Claudius is having with this one.
And the butler tastes his food. He knows all about the wine. Claudius bickers with him. Stop showing off.
It is what I love. It's like a long, in some ways, purposeless scene, but it's also a wonderful scene because it's one of these moments where it's like, let's stop for a moment. This is not just History Illustrated. We're going to show you real people who interact with each other. And so this emperor, who even if he's emperor, people still don't really respect him. His food taster talks to him as if he is his roommate who is stuck with this really uncool Claudius as his roommate. It's just like, oh, that wine, it was a bad year. There wasn't enough sugar in the grapes. And Claudius is like, stop showing off. It's such a, like, it's just great interaction. You know?
And, oh, it's great. And the best part, of course, is when his butler goes, what are you working on now? Another history? A sequel to your history on the Etruscans? He goes, no, about my family. And Claudius goes, wait a minute, did you read my history of the Etruscans? And the butler goes, literally says,
no, I got it down from the library once, but I couldn't get into it.
I took it out of the library, but I couldn't get into it. It's like, you don't say that to the Emperor of Rome.
It's a sign of how, I mean, it's a beautiful way of showing how unrespected Claudius is that Augustus is, even when people are plotting behind him, they are flattering him constantly, you know, but Claudius is just like, yeah, I didn't read your book. And Claudius, it didn't really appeal to me. And Claudius is having Derek Jacobi is literally having to cram food with his fingers through his makeup into his mouth. And it's just like, oh, that must have been so gross.
It's true. And Claudius believes that he's being poisoned. He's having his food tasted because he's afraid he's being poisoned by his wife in this present day scenario, who and her creepo son. That's not the word he uses, but that is the future Emperor Nero, is the creepo son of his wife. But that's for later. It's for later in this podcast series.
Yes.
And then what happens? I guess they go back to the past, and Emperor Augustus says, "At least I have Gaius and Lucius and Livia to,
well,
to inherit from me."
Everyone's mourning Drusus, and Tiberius is mad at Livia, but ends up slapping Julia because Julia does not want to be married to Tiberius anymore.
Let me go, you fat drunken cow!
Fat! Fat! If I'm fat, I'm fat where a woman should be fat, not skinny like a boy.
And instead he says, no, you cannot divorce Tiberius. This is your third husband. You can't get divorced, but we're going to send Tiberius away, out to where he wants to be, away from Rome at the very least. But you're going to have to stay married.
Right. Julia gets mad at Tiberius and he ends up losing his feces and hits her because she has initiated having hugging and kissing. She says, "Will you sleep over? Will you sleep with me tonight?" Because husbands and wives didn't always sleep in the same room at that time, which is, of course, a great one of the great innovations of civilization that we have discarded.
Mm-hmm.
And he says no because he's disgusted by her. And she said, "Fine, I'll send you a young boy, and I can vouch that he's good because I've had him myself." Oh, scandalous! Because not only is she revealing herself as a sexual libertine, which becomes a big plot point in future episodes, but also reveals that Tiberius likes young men to hug and kiss with more than her. This gets his gander up and he hits her, and Augustus is mad. Tiberius is mad. Livia is like, how am I going to use this to my advantage? And that's the end of episode one.
But this is a great place for us to take a break. You're listening to iPodius on Maximum Fun. We'll be right back.
Hey, Elliot Kalin, it's I, John Hodgman, and I have some news for you.
Exciting.
I've tried to look up good news in Latin, but I couldn't figure out how to pronounce it. So I'm just going to say good news in Latin.
Let's just say goodest news is. What
is
it?
There you go. Well, iPodius exists because of our Max Fund members. We only did it because the Max Fund members stepped up and joined or upgraded last year and basically forced our hand, and now we have to do it.
Yeah, they pulled the trigger on this Russian roulette that we assumed nobody would be foolish enough to make us actually go through with.
And Max Fund members, of course, are the backbone of the entire Maximum Fund enterprise, and we thank them for that. But from time to time, we get some support from some third parties. And I'm really excited to say that after the first episode of iPodius came out, we got contacted by Acorn TV. And Acorn TV, if you don't know it, is a streaming service that specializes in incredible British programming from today, yesterday, and the day before yesterday, including shows like I, Claudius. Are you familiar with Acorn, Elliot?
I am a little bit familiar, but I'd love to hear more because I know you are a dedicated Acorn user.
Oh, look, I've been an Acorn fan since the catalog days. Back when Acorn used to be a catalog, you'd buy VHS tapes and send them to your dad or order them for yourself of British television.
Mm-hmm.
But for the past couple of years, Acorn has now become a streaming service. And, you know, some of my very favorite British TV shows, such as, you ever see Foyle's War?
No, but I... Is it on Acorn? Can I watch it there?
It's on Acorn, yes.
Should I watch
including
it?
Michael Kitchen as Detective Foyle, World War II detective in a small town in England. He wants to go to war, but they won't let him because he's too good a detective. So he's got to stay behind during wartime England and solve wartime-related crimes. It's incredible. Michael Kitchen's so good in it. And his driver is a woman named Sam. You know who plays her?
No.
An actor named Honeysuckle Weeks. All of this is true. Plus, people who listen to Judge John Hodgman know how incredibly fond I am of the British comedy Detectorists, created by Mackenzie Crook from The Office, the British Office, and co-starring Toby Jones. I mean, it's got, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. From mystery and thrillers to comedy and drama, Acorn TV is your, and I'm pointing my finger at you, Elliot, your streaming destination for critically acclaimed series from Britain, Australia, Ireland, and beyond.
What kind of TV stars could I see there in Acorn programs?
Only the biggest stars of television. Sandra Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, Olivia Colman. You can binge watch a classic series like Midsummer Murders, which is a classic. Or discover a new favorite like the two I just told you about, Foyle's War, which we may have to do a podcast about. And Detectorist, which is about two guys in contemporary England who walk around some of the most beautiful countryside with their heads staring at the ground as they run a metal detector over the earth looking for treasure. It's so
I love
great.
It. They're living my best life.
So probably you want to know how to get at this acorn.
Please tell me. I mean, do I have to dig it up out of the ground like a squirrel? I hope not, but I'm willing to do it because it sounds great.
No, Elliot, it's streaming television. It's not under the ground. It's not in a mine. Visit www.acorn.tv or download the Acorn TV app on your favorite device and use code PODIUS, PODIUS, for an extended 30-day free trial. That's acorn.tv, code PODIUS. Acorn TV, world-class TV from Britain, and beyond. And I'm excited. when they retweeted us, I was like, I'm getting that acorn bump. I mean, we both are. I'm sorry, we're co-hosts.
No. But I know this is very special for you, and I appreciate that. And I can't wait to make it special for me too. I'm going to take advantage of Acorn TV and watch all the British shows I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, think of weird younger John Hodgman leafing through the Acorn catalog in old timey times, like just dog earing the Hercule Poirot pages. And now think of how excited I am to tell you, Acorn TV is at acorn.tv. Use code PODIUS, please, to let them know how excited we are. Check it out. All right, let's get back to the Empire.
Hey, I'm Jared Hill, co-host of the brand new Maximum Fun podcast, Fantai.
And I'm Travell Anderson. I'm the other more fabulous co-host. And the reason you really should be tuning in.
I feel the nausea rising.
To be Fantai is to be a big fan of something, but also have some challenging or anti feelings toward it.
Kind of like Kanye.
We're all fans of Kanye. He's a musical genius, but like, you know.
He thinks slavery is a choice.
Or like the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, I love the drama, but do I want to see black women fighting each other on screen?
To the nah. We're tackling all of those complex and complicated conversations about the people, places, and things that we love.
Even though they may not love us back.
Fanti, Maximum Fun, podcast.
Ow.
Hey, you've reached Dr. Game Show. Leave your message after the beep.
Dr. Game Show is my favorite podcast and the only podcast my parents let me listen to because I'm 12, but even old people love this show. Basically, you call in, play games, and have fun. If you win a game, a baby will send you a magnet in the mail. I have so many magnets and put them all over my locker, and pretty much everyone at school is jealous because they are very cool custom magnets, and it also means that I'm really good at winning games. And they even let me practice my record live on the air. Listening to this show is like going to a real doctor, but pretty much kind of better. Dr. Game Show rocks.
Listen to Dr. Game Show on Maximum Fun. New episodes every other Wednesday.
And we're back. Welcome back.
I'm going to say one thing before we talk further. Something I will in
and
future
by talk
episodes,
further. You mean wrap it up? Because
I guess so.
We have now been talking for precisely 1 hour.
I just want to say that at this point in future episodes, I will talk about somewhat the historical basis or not historical basis of things that are going on. One thing that I will mention.
Okay,
I'm going to call this.
If we make this, we're still finding our feet here.
Yes,
Rome wasn't built in a day, Elliot. And we can make this a bumper episode because indeed this first episode, A Touch of Murder, is itself a bumper episode. It was a 90-minute episode, and the rest are all 60 minutes. So by an episode next, by episode II of iPodius, we'll have the plot summary will be super fast. I'm gonna make it my business to get through the plot as quickly as possible.
Okay, so that having wrapped
I'm gonna
up
be
the...
Like, I'm going to be micro-machining it. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. That is, I am exactly the right age for that word to be used in that way to describe fast talking.
See, I love it when families can get along.
So one of the things that Robert Graves did is he said, like I said earlier, like, I'm going to take basically the worst thing that anyone ever said about each of these people and put it in. And in Rome, there was a, and there still is, frankly, but it was much worse then. There was a tradition of when your enemy dies, you just spread the worst possible rumors about them. And you just make them out to be the worst, most evil, devious people in the world. And so, like, I don't know how much actual history there is for Livia having poisoned Marcellus. But and there are certain things where, like, all the stories about Caligula, which will come up later, are things where it's hard to tell whether they actually happened or not, because there were a lot of people who had a lot of interest in making Caligula out to be the worst man who ever lived after his death. So just know as we go forward that many times it will turn out that history is fuzzy on these things, and it will be hard to separate rumor from fact. So the easiest thing to do is, I guess, as much as possible, I'll just assume that if I don't have anything that directly contradicts what happens in this show, we'll just be like, that's how it happened. That's when they were playing that board game. Historical fact. No way to get around it.
Or history is written by the grudge holders and the axe grinders. And
yes.
And so insofar as these may not be true facts, but they are true rumors. And when you know my saying, when the rumors are true, they're trumors. That's the tagline for a 90s thriller that I was trying to write in the 2000s called Trumors. When the rumors are true, they're Trumors.
And it's, Trumors is, it's too bad that never made it past the first draft stage, I guess.
But it never made it past the tagline stage. I don't even know what it's about.
You spent so much time trying to figure out what a Trumor would be. What form would a Trumor take? So I guess we shouldn't talk for too much longer, but I would like to say that...
Say the things you want to say.
That I really...
This segment is called The Things Elliot Wants to Say Before We End.
we'll think of another name for it, but the maybe. The show, like, once I get past the strangeness of watching something that is so careless about production value, when production value is so important to us right now in a way that is probably not that healthy. Like, and it's the thing that kept me when I was younger from a lot of other British drama. British comedy, it could look super cheap. I didn't care. But British drama, when I was young, I would watch Doctor Who and I'd be like, I would like to be excited about this, but it's so clearly that they're just in a cardboard box right now. And someone off camera is shaking the cardboard box and something, and like that prop just fell over. Like, it took me a little bit of time to get past that at first while watching it, mm-hmm. but then to get wrapped up in, like you were saying, the words and the performance are what are important. And it's just such a, like, interesting story and such an exciting story. And like, I was really, by the end of the first episode, I was so drawn into it and ready for episode two, which is entitled Family Affairs. And I'm looking forward to that one. I haven't watched it yet. But,
that's the one where they get the butler, Mr. French.
Yeah, and he really puts the family back into shape, and then he has to leave at the end, and they're like, oh, thank you. How can we ever repay you? And she's like, well, make another movie about me in 50 years. And then opens her umbrella and flies off into the air. So anyway, your Mr. French turned into my Mary Poppins somehow.
People know what Mary Poppins is, as opposed to who Mr. French was from the Brian Keith drama show, A Family of, what was it called? A Family Affair, wasn't it called?
It was Family Affair. That's
Family
right.
Affair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know why for some reason I thought it was called something else for a moment. But anyway, it's like, I would recommend to anyone who has never seen the show before, all the young people out there, I would say, give it that time. All my friends are always like, oh, you didn't like that show? Well, you really need to give it 4 episodes. And I'm like, no, thank you. Uh-uh. Give this show at least 30 minutes. And I almost guarantee that you'll be drawn in, if only by the strangeness of seeing something that is a period piece in a very strange era of history, that is also a period piece of what it was like to be in a British television studio in the 1970s in a certain way. There's just like so many things going on in it that are like really interesting, and I'm being very inarticulate about it, if only because it's just my enthusiasm. I'm just really excited about it.
Well, you know what? I'm glad when I proposed this podcast, I honestly was like, I hope Elliot likes this thing. Although if you hated it, then it would give us a frisson of fighting. That would make this the Doughboys of iClaudius podcasts. But I'm really glad you liked it. I'm really glad to be rewatching it with you. And we will. Our next episode will be about the next episode, episode 2 of iClaudius, which is called Family Affairs.
Apologize. Family Affairs is... Family Affairs is technically the second half of A Touch of Murder. I was wrong. The second episode is called Waiting in the Wings. This episode, since it was extra length, they considered it 2 episodes that were aired together. But,
oh, okay.
You know, that explains why in some places I see it listed as a 12-episode series and in some as an 11-episode series. All right, now I get it.
Or a 13-episode series. So that's why I was a little confused about how many episodes there were. We're getting to the bottom of history.
So, yep, call us history detectives.
Another history mystery solved.
And so next time it will be Waiting in the Wings.
Hey,
that will be the episode.
Before we go, here's a little trivia. You remember when we were talking about Drusus and Tiberius having that incredibly half-nude wrestling moment and then a back scraping moment? Those were two possible James Bonds at fighting. George Baker, who plays Tiberius, who's the mean one, the dark one, the one who eventually becomes super creep, was considered by Ian Fleming to be the ideal candidate to play James Bond. But the role went to Sean Connery because George Baker was busy. Good decision. This is all according to Wikipedia.
And no, considering this is British filmmaking, he might have just been busy with dinner plans. It may not have had another job. I don't know.
The dashing Ian Ogilvy, who is so likable as Drusus, even though he is kind of dull-headed and put his Republican fervor in writing for his own mother, knowing that mother would kill him.
And it's so early in the letter, too. It's just like, hey, how you doing? Tiberius, I miss you. My head hurts a little bit. Anyway,
Rome is a disgrace.
We must overthrow the emperor or he has to leave. It's like, oh, at least bury it a little bit. Put in the second paragraph. Come on.
So Ian Ogilvy took over the role of Simon Templar, a.k.a. The Saint, another action thriller adventurer, right? Not exactly a spy, but a debonair sort of amateur do-gooder.
Yeah.
Played by Roger Moore in the original TV show, Ian Ogilvy took over the role of Simon Templar in a brief remake of The Saint called The Saint Returns or something like that. Return of the Saint. And then
he's like a gentleman thief type. The Saint.
He's like a good guy thief.
Good guy thief, right?
And then when Roger Moore was threatening to retire from James Bond, Ian Ogilvy was also in the running for James Bond, and George R. R. Martin, who maybe we should try to get him on this podcast.
Yeah, sure.
Because George R. R. Martin said that George Baker, and specifically his performance of Tiberius, the tortured, mean guy who has an ambivalent relationship with his own power, was an inspiration for Stannis Baratheon in Game of Thrones.
Oh, I can see that, I guess. Yeah.
These are all things I learned on Wikipedia before you did. That's a little segment called Hodgman Got to Wikipedia First on these particular facts. Until we settle on the name of this podcast and how it goes, my name is John Hodgman. Et tu here is...
Elliot Kalin. This episode of iPodius has been a production of Maximus Fun, which is a Roman joke, but it also is kind of a Transformers-sounding joke. Our producer is Jordan Cowling. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And if you happen to be watching iClaudius along with the podcast, as you should be, please let us know about your thoughts about the show. It's too late for us to talk about it in the podcast, but we're still interested. You can reach me at Elliot Kalin on Twitter, 2 L's and 2 T's, and Elliot. And you can reach John Hodgman at Hodgman on Twitter and at John Hodgman on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening.
And we'll talk some more later.
MaximusFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
The garlic's a little overdone for my taste.